Naming rights. I am currently trying to write a murder mystery, not because I have a great plot line in mind or a deep roiling well of family dysfunction and tragedy to draw from, but mostly because I want the naming rights. I figure I have very limited opportunities to name things. My children, pets, maybe I can rename myself, but these will never be enough to exhaust the great names in my mental notebook. And I don't think that I'm alone here. In The Great Gatsby, F. Scott Fitzgerald spends a couple of pages reeling off the names of Gatsby's houseguests. This doesn't seem to advance the plot at all, except to showcase Fitzgerald's quirky Rolodex. His couples are named the Catlips, or the Fish Guards. There's a man named Clip Springer, and a whole clan named Black Buck. Occasionally, Fitzgerald adds an extraneous but compelling detail. There's Edgar Beaver, whose hair, they say, turned white one summer for no reason at all. Or Ripley Snell, who got so drunk on the gravel drive that Mrs. Ulysses Sweat's automobile ran over his right hand. Somehow specifying gravel and the right hand instead of the left makes Ripley Snell even quirkier. So my first step in writing a mystery was to figure out what names I would use, and basically I hoped that the plot line would somehow take care of itself. Like Fitzgerald, I wanted to set the mystery in some sort of cloister, elitist environment filled with people with ridiculous names. I wanted to have people with first names that sounded more like last names, and pretentious last names. Examples could include Farwell Windblow, Foster Cradle Rock, or Cooley Bowbreaks. In fact, I envisioned a family saddled with colliding naming traditions. On the mother's side, the tradition was that the firstborn son was named after the mother's maiden name, while on the father's side, the firstborn daughter was named after the father. Unfortunately for the son in this fictitious family, the mother's maiden name was Kate, and his twin sister was called Billy. This transgender reassignment was never questioned in their tight world, particularly since the family summered in Maine at their family compound called Kate's Head Bay. Their neighbor was named Carr Fellows, but everyone just called him Otto, A-U-T-O. Finally, one year, he just went ahead and legally changed his name to Otto, O-T-T-O, and so on and so on. The fabulous thing about writing a mystery novel is that you can experiment with names, switch them around, and name the murder victim or the sleazy perp after friends. The possibilities are endless. In my mystery, I named one of the characters Goddard, because I wanted someone to have the nickname of God. And then his sister could be a goddess. My detective is Liza Blue, based on my brother's long-ago suggestion that we collectively change the color of our last name. Blue seemed the best alternative to our brown. What would be the point of changing brown to something equally blah like green, white, or black? Liza Blue had a nice rhythm about it and reminded me of Eyes of Blue. Also with Blue, you could play around with the spelling, i.e. Blue, B-L-E-W, B-L-O-O, B-A-L-O-O, or very French, B-L-E-U. In the real world, your naming rights are severely limited by the number of your children. Basically, a couple of first names and associated nicknames, and a couple of middle names. And how do you want to spend this precious resource? Do you want to honor ancestors, either living or dead? If so, which ones? And are you sliding the other side of the family? When I was a child, the tradition was that the firstborn son was a junior, so my brother got stuck with the name Ralphie. There is no similar tradition for girls, though plenty were named after their mothers. My mother's name was Fanny, and fortunately for me, she announced early on that she did not want anyone to repeat her parents' mistake. It would certainly be quite an honor to have someone named after you, and I think of my grandmother Brown, who is a matriarch in every sense of the word, not only to her 5 children and 22 grandchildren, but also to several generations of nieces and nephews. Her Christmas list must have numbered in the hundreds. Her house was the family gathering spot and a treasured memory among all my cousins. I imagine that she sat by the phone with bated breath after each birth, thinking that maybe this time at last she would have a namesake. The problem was her name was Geraldine, and I think that everyone thought it was an ugly name. When my parents were married, my mother made a preemptive strike. She got a police dog and named her Geraldine. That was one ballsy move by my newlywed mother. She must have wanted to send her mother-in-law a very clear message that she was in charge of the relationship. Perhaps to make up for this early slight, my parents gave my grandmother the naming rights to their 4th son. Geraldine wasn't a possibility, and they were relieved that my grandfather's even more unfortunate name, Fay, had already been used by my Uncle Fay, who had stuck with tradition and named his son Fayette III. poor guy. My grandmother proposed the name Nathaniel Walker Brown, honoring some long-lost relative. My parents dutifully wrote this into the birth certificate, but then promptly ignored it and merrily called my brother Tony. If Tony enters politics, he will have to put his name in quotes, Nathaniel Tony Brown, like Thomas Tip O'Neill or Lewis Scooter Libby. It's a tricky business to name your children. I think that it's a parental responsibility to find that fine line between a name that makes your child feel unique and special and not an oddball. A name that is not constantly misspelled or mispronounced or prompts a reaction of, huh? If the name has a little family heritage, all the better. Our son's given name is Edward, which is a family name, but we chose Ned because it was somewhat uncommon, but it's still a name you can do business with. Also, we have never met a Ned we didn't like. Our daughter Frances is as close as we could come to my mother's name of Fanny. But basically, if you want to get creative with a name, get a dog and go wild. I once proposed that we name a dog LMNOP, but that was voted down as overly cute. How about naming a dog Kitty? You could call here, Kitty, 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 and surprise onlookers when a large dog would bound up. My cousin says her elderly aunt named her dog Lover so that she could startle the neighborhood when she called to him at night. But beware of getting too cute. While friends and family will probably politely hold their tongue at the reveal of your newborn's name, they will freely express their shock and dismay at your pet's name. Our first dog was a Schnauzer poodle mix, which we named Gizmo. My mother immediately weighed in. Don't you realize that Gizmo is one of those cute names that mothers use to avoid saying penis out loud? Such as, Ralphie, put that thing away. Never touch your Gizmo in public. So go ahead and humiliate a pet with some crackpot name, but don't overlook the one special person you can reliably make fun of, yourself. Your final naming opportunity will come when you announce what your grandchildren should call you. Settling for grandma or grandpa seems like a lost opportunity. When my parents first became grandparents, I begged them to call themselves Gumby and Pokey, but they declined. My mother did get into the spirit of the thing and anointed herself Bum, a British play on her given name of Fanny, and soon anyone under the age of 10 was calling her Bum. I don't foresee needing a grandmother name any time in the distant future, but I figure there's no harm in tucking a few away. I would make a good Pokey, but Nick is not a fan of Gumby. Maybe we could consider other famous couples, such as Bert and Ernie. I'd be willing to be Bert. Or Lady and the Tramp. Well, maybe not that. I've also considered pairs of words that always go together, drawing on the symbolism of an enduring partnership. But I've had trouble coming up with an acceptable combo. Board and Grapple, for example, just won't work. I've always liked the duo Flotsam and Jetsam, particularly the sound of the word flotsam, but these words would be too difficult for a toddler to pronounce. Ebb and Flow might work, and Nick likes Warm and Fuzzy. For a solo name, I have taken a recent fancy to the name of Dobbin, best known as a farmyard horse. This name would be easy to pronounce, and it has many positive attributes: hardworking, forever loyal, trustworthy, and low maintenance. Just give Dobbin a fresh bag of oats every now and then, and with a lump of sugar and a pat on the back, she should be good to go.